You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of March 23rd, 2022. And we're lifting our tunics. Oh, there's a sword in there.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
I'm George Alborg.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. This week, something new, something old?
Oh, I mean, old-ish. It's fresh, baby.
Get with the times.
Yeah.
The backlash to the backlash has already happened.
There are still memes about it. Therefore, it is current.
We're gonna talk about, well, we've continued to play Elden Ring, so we will do a check-in on it. And I started playing Tunic, and so we'll do some initial impressions of that thing.
I'm excited for that, for sure, because that was one of the games we talked about this coming year that looked really cute.
Yes. What do you want to start with? Do you want to start?
Well, I think we should talk with Tunic, because you had mentioned earlier that there were some soul similarities, so... Away, you know, we get great segue opportunity.
I'm listening.
So this is a game by a small indie studio, right? Finji. It's probably like four people or something.
Yes. They have, I mean, Finji has been around for a long time too. Like, they're the ones that did like Cave Story and Aquaria. And,
oh yeah.
I think they worked on one of the Fez ports. I mean, like, they've been around. A Night in the Woods, I think, was them.
Wow. So, that's pretty significant in terms of the games that they've made, right? Oh, Chicory as well, which was nominated for some games.
Yeah, I mean, Chicory is still actually on my, like, I'm looking at their list every once in a while.
Cannibalt?
Cool game. I mean, like, Finji is legit. I mean, it's weird. I feel like Finji is one of those, like, It's like a band that never, like, got big but is extremely well respected, you know.
Sure,
it's like, oh, this isn't the Dandy Warhols, this is Brian Jonestown Massacre, you know, like that sort of thing, you know, like,
if I knew music, quote, that would be unquote, hilarious.
Sold out.
Sure, yeah.
No, you know that. It's Dig, the people from Dig.
Oh, right. Okay.
I mean, it's like, I don't know what the deal is, but I think these people, you know, Finji makes cool games, but hasn't reached the, like, huge mainstream popularity.
Yeah, yeah. Gamey nominee, multiple years. So
totally, yeah. I mean, like, it's they have a pedigree, and I've enjoyed multiple of their games. And so anyway, they created this game, and you're right. I think, like, I mean, I think Finji is, like, several people, you know.
Yeah.
There's, like, one person, I think, behind it. And then there's, you know, obviously collaborators and such.
So tell me a little bit about Tunic. Based upon what we saw, it looks a little bit like Legend of Zelda meets, what's the game we recently played? Death something?
Yes, Death's Door.
Death's Door. It's like Death's Door meets Zelda meets, like, Monument Valley, right? Because it's got this, like, very, almost like, like a 3D version of a tabletop RPG that you might see, right? Everything looks like a toy.
Yeah, yeah. It's it has a little bit of the look of that remake of Link's Awakening from a couple years ago. But I mean, saying that this game is an homage to Legend of Zelda is underselling it.
Right.
I mean, this is a gushing love letter to the kind of 8 and 16-bit Legend of Zelda games.
Mm-hmm.
Right from the very beginning of the game, where you wake up on a beach, where, like, you wake up, you're in this, you're this,
you have,
green,
you have a wicked hangover.
I mean, it looks like it, because you're just, you have nothing. You have no gear, you have nothing, but then you start to immediately,
you're like the bird from items. Animal Crossing.
What if you, and then someone tells you to leave the island so, like, a hippo can come or whatever. Like, it's really, but it isn't a ripoff, you know, like, it is such a loving homage to the game, right down to, like, little details where, like, the fox's hair, you know, its little flourish of hair on the top of its head is this pink color, mm-hmm. which was what, for whatever reason, what the Super Nintendo palette did with Link's hair in Link to the Past. Like, it's always weird. Like, yeah. His hair looks kind of pinkish, even down to the tiniest details like that. I mean, it's such a loving homage to everything that those games were.
Right.
And also how those games made, you know, the kind of impact and the feel that those games instituted.
It's always interesting to me when you get a game like this or others that we've played in the past that wear its homage on its sleeve, right?
Yeah.
I think the cover art or the key art for Tunic, I mean, it looks like Zelda, right? The dude's wearing a green thing and holding up a sword, and it's so obvious, right? Because it's a challenge, because when you do something like that and you compare yourself to the greatest, right?
Yeah.
There's a need to succeed. You know, you gotta knock it out of the park. Otherwise, people are gonna be like, okay, well, it comes up short. Like, this is it's a mockery or a failed attempt at homage. This one, in my understanding, is it sounds like it's getting pretty good reviews. Are you liking it?
I really like this game quite a bit. I think the stuff that it does is, I mean, it is an homage to those older games, but it's clearly informed by where games have gone since then.
Sure.
Stop me if you heard this one before, but every once in a while you find a statue with a bonfire connected to it.
Interesting.
And you get to restore your health and your magic and your MP, but check this out, the enemies are back.
Oh, you know, no.
Like, so
when
I
you
mean,
die, you have to go get your souls.
You do.
Okay, of course.
So when you die, you have to go back and get the currency that's in the game. It's not so much like a Souls game in that you lose everything. It's like you lose a chunk of the currency, but you can do a corpse run back to where you fell.
So one thing I was reading about this game was that when you pick up your soul, a little explosion happens.
Yes.
To damage enemies nearby. I think that is such a fucking good idea and should be in Dark Souls. The idea of rushing and then like picking up your souls is already such a frantic thing. What a nice little reward, you know, to give you that offensive ability.
It's so smart. I mean, the way that is set up and you know, a little, because it is a punishment, but it's also it lessens the punishment by saying, like, look, you know, you'll get a fighting chance if you rush in to get these things. Like, it's just these little tweaks to the formula are again, these are the, every once in a while we play a game where our criticism of the game is like, it feels like these people have not played a video game for 50, like the Rockstar games to me are like, this feels like it was made by people who don't know that other video games exist.
Yeah.
And this game feels like people, like it's made by people who are acutely knowledgeable of the entire medium and use that to make a good game.
Yeah.
Well, so like, it's just such a satisfying thing to see them kind of put it all together and put their own spin on it.
It's very easy for an indie game, I think, to be more adaptive and like learn from games, right? Because it takes so fucking long to make a AAA game.
Yeah.
That like you're just not gonna know, right? So there is that like added benefit of it for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's just something to the willingness to engage directly with those influences that are out there. So I want to say a couple more things about the game. For you specifically, I actually don't know if you will like this game or not.
Oh, really? I hate foxes. Because,
I mean, I know you love foxes. We all love Firefox.
Star Fox.
God, what other foxes are out there?
Fox and the Hound. In video games?
Yeah. Now I've gone down a fox rabbit hole.
I mean, there's Ari. She's got 9 tails, right? That's like a legendary fox.
How about Gray Fox from Metal Gear Solid?
Oh, sure.
Anyway, tangent. My point is that there are major Fez vibes in this game, and kind of setting off alarm bells where I'm like, oh boy, I wonder if George is going to like this one.
In what way? In the sort of 3D puzzle kind of way? Or in the, like, this is a complete fucking waste of my time and an arbitrary puzzle design?
Not so much the 3D puzzles, although because the game does do a lot with kind of forced perspective, where
right.
something that just kind of looks like a dead end is actually kind of a trick of the eye where like, oh, there's actually depth here. And this corner is actually a shortcut to this other part of the map that I used to have to go around in. You know, like there's, yeah. there's little tricks that like really in a Dark Souls like way, like you don't, the game dumps you out into those shortcuts after you do a big milestone, like after you do a boss or something. But like, there's nothing preventing you from using that shortcut beforehand. It's just so obscured unless you're really searching for it. You're like, oh shit, like that shortcut was here the whole time. I just wasn't looking at it three-dimensionally and like, here it is, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I find that stuff pretty interesting, but it is a bit like that. But I mean, on the Fez train, like there is definitely a made-up language in this game.
Ooh, okay.
And it gets... And there's already hints towards something pretty meta happening because the game doesn't tell you how to do anything. So when you pick up an item, the text that you see when you pick it up is in the made up language. So
like even in the menu.
I will say especially in the menu.
Oh, good.
Because the menus are all in the made up language, and the way that you
what?
Figure out
how what to if play I want to like remap my controls.
There is a fourth wall breaking. Well, I actually don't know if it's like part of the game, but like there is a meta menu of like, you know, visual options and all okay, that okay, stuff. Okay. But the in-game inventory and all that shit is like all in the language. And so, but the way that the game communicates how the game works to you, other than just trial and error and you figuring out like what the items do, is throughout the world you are picking up pieces of an in-game instruction manual that looks exactly like an old Super Nintendo instruction manual.
Oh, like, okay.
Down to like the cross stitching of the printing of it. Like, well, there's
that kind of just breaks the fiction of the world, no?
Well, there is, that's the point. Like, the whole thing is kind of a meta thing where it's like you're picking up these pieces, but when you look at them, it's kind of explaining the game to you. You're picking it up, but inside the instruction manual, as there was, as was the case in many of those old instruction manuals, there's a map of the world.
Sure.
And so like, that's how you figure out how the world is shaped and like where, what the items are in there. And so you're finding these pages, but you're finding them out of order. So like, you're seeing these little diagrams in the pages and there's like little hints about what the items do, but then it'll say like, it's clearly referencing like, to learn more about this, flip to page 22. But like, you haven't found page 22 yet. And yeah. So you're kind of like figuring out how all of this stuff works at the same time. There is also a meta part of the instruction manual where there are clearly handwritten notes in the instruction manual.
I mean,
so someone has been in outside of the game. Someone has been like writing little notes in the margins of the thing. And you're like, oh, like,
yeah,
that in and of itself is a hint inside of the instructions.
What happened to me in my youth that made me turn against like fourth wall breaking stuff? You know,
I don't know. I think it highly hinges on how much fondness you have for that style, because
well, but then isn't it just nostalgia for nostalgia's sake? Like, it's, oh, both you and I played Zelda. It's like, well, I mean, yeah, that's not the point though, right?
So I think what separates this from pure nostalgia is that it, even if you didn't play that,
sure,
the just the flat out excellence of the art and the, I think they do a pretty good job of the mystery of like, How do these items work together? And like, I realized I figured out how an item worked together before getting all the pages about it, because I was just thinking about like, oh, what are these what does this icon look like? Why is it pointing to this other item that it interacts with? And then as I was using the item in the overworld, I was like, oh shit, like I need to go to this place and use this coin and then something will happen. And like, lo and behold, it did.
But you don't need to like break the fiction of the world to do that though, right? Like, I mean, talking about Elden Ring, like there's random items in Elden Ring that reference shit where you can go and find it. It's not, the reference doesn't have to be couched in the terminology of like a video game manual from the 80s.
I think this is less like, if you take a step back, this mm-hmm. kind of feels like this feels like the indie game ethos of the kind of Braid and Fez era versus where we are today, where it's like it is explicitly talking about video games as a medium versus just using it as a medium for storytelling. And so there is no fiction. I mean, like, there's no real it's not breaking the fiction of the game because it is part of the fiction of the game.
Yeah, and I mean, to that extent, you know, I have a fondness for certain, like, films about films, right? Like, The Stories We Tell is a documentary that is about documentaries, right? And the way, and the function that documentaries play, right? So that kind of story, there is a way to do it right. So maybe I would like this. Maybe this does accomplish that, right? But part of it is just like, well, what are you really adding anything new to that? Or is this just dressing in that sort of nostalgia or, like, gimmicky way where both you and I are wink, wink, nudge, nudge. It's a video game.
Right. I think the thing that separates it, too, is, I remember reading instruction manuals of video games, not just because they taught us how to play the game, but because the instruction manuals themselves were part of building the fiction of the game. You know, there was never the hardware wasn't there and the prowess wasn't there to, like, make something look like Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
And so you use the manual to get your brain working. It's like, oh shit, like, what this actually is this immense cave with this snarling beast in it. And I know because there's a stylized rendering of it in the instruction manual.
Yeah.
And so I think, and I'm getting the same sense of that from Tunic, where it's like, oh shit, this world is so much bigger and so much crazier, but because it's 2022 and it's a game kind of meta about this, I know that I actually will encounter that sort of mystery in the game versus it just being implied as a part of the instruction booklet.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like the instruction booklet is no longer just a fantasy of, like, oh, here's what the game could look like in your imagination. It's like, this is what the game looks like, and you will find these weird things because we have the skills now and the technology now to render them.
We have
and
the so technology.
It's a cool thing because it's realizing a fantasy of, like, wow, what if A Link to the Past actually looked like those cool animated or those cool hand-drawn stills from the instruction manual? Like, wouldn't it be so cool to play a game like that? And now you kind of are. You know, it's like, not only is this a mysterious kind of external world building item in the instruction manual, it's also telling you what's going to go on in the game, which I've been enjoying.
Interesting. Well, I mean, it's on Game Pass, so I should try check it out.
I'll also say, because there is, like, significant Souls-like influence there, like, the game is actually hard as shit when you first start. And you can very easily not go in a beneficial sequence in terms of the game. Like, there's definitely, like, a Blight Town type of moment where it's like, oh shit. Like, if I turn left, like, this game is extremely difficult. Whereas if I turn right, it's just, like, reasonably difficult. And they don't tell you. Like, there's any of the guides that are there are in-world guides, you know, like signposts or, like, you know.
I want to see corpses, you know. I want to see, like, dead bodies of other foxes so that I know, like, this is a do not pass.
I mean, one of the first things is, like, there is something that is, like, I think it's called, like, the Hero's Memorial or something like that. So, like, there is reference to, like, oh, maybe you're not the first one to wear the tunic, you know. And like, that all plays into it. So, but, I mean, yeah, the first section of the game, you know, you're definitely running from a lot of enemies because you just have a stick, and the stick is not going to take out enemies the way that the sword can.
Sure. It's always interesting to me when someone who knows my taste well, because, I mean, we've been doing this podcast for so long. If there's anyone that knows my taste, it's you, right?
Yeah.
For someone like you to be like, I don't know if you like this game. I mean, it's probably right, right? Like, there is a good chance I might not like it, but it's
definitely a coin toss. I mean, I think it would be academically interesting just to kind of see what they're doing with the art and you know, how they're folding the manual into the game and all that stuff. But, like,
you had me at academic.
I mean, roll your mind back to, like, 2009, and it's like that sort of indie vintage versus the kind of popular vintage zeitgeist that's today.
It's a heady brew, aged.
Yeah. It's, Anyway,
it's just so funny because, you know, when we think back to that era, there are quite a few video games that, you know, with time and yep. sort of revisiting haven't aged well, you know, like,
yeah.
I loved Braid when we first played it, but like, you know, at some point it's like, okay, I get it. You know, that was like the limitation in terms of storytelling, you know?
I think, it's also, I think it was so influential that in retrospect you can get kind of burnt out on it because that's so fair, many other yeah. games took something from it, you know? I think this game is doing something pretty special. I'm going to keep playing it, but like I am interested to see where it goes and like how far they go with it. It's also, if for nothing more than checking out the art style, like I think they do pretty amazing things with how they make the game look. And there's like a very purposeful reason. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even like the little shadows and stuff that they do, like it does look great. So anyway, that's been, I mean, there are two games right now and I have like literal notebooks to like remind myself what to do in them. And yeah. this is one of them.
I don't think I could be like you and leave Elden Ring and still yeah. remember how to play Elden Ring. Afterwards,
I mean, we'll see. I haven't played Elden Ring for a couple days, and so like when I go back in, I just might be like, last time I played Elden Ring, I rolled off the edge of a cliff in disgrace accidentally as I was running away from a ninja. So you know, that's my status.
I mean, makes sense. Checks out.
So that's Tunic. I really like it, but I think people should check it out. A kind of qualified recommendation to you.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, I think yeah. we'll revisit that later then once you finish and maybe I get a chance to play it.
Yeah.
Out now on Game Pass, so that's cool.
Yep.
All right, shall we talk a little bit about Elden Ring?
Yes.
I am exactly 69 hours in.
Nice.
Which is
I thought you were going to say 420 hours and I would have believed it.
Dude, I wish, honestly. my old coworker has already beaten the game and is in New Game Plus, and I'm like, I'm so jealous right now.
Oh man,
there's just
what do they do for New Game Plus?
I think it's just the game again. I mean, here's the thing: okay. We don't know, right? Because
right.
in previous Dark Souls games, sometimes New Game Plus would be different. Like,
right?
Sometimes they would change what enemies were in certain areas. Oftentimes, the bosses are slightly harder, but it my understanding in past Souls games, based upon experience, generally speaking. The player outscales the advancement of the bosses pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You know, like they only get better slightly and then more so and more so it caps out at some point. But,
yeah.
you know, there were better rings and stuff. So who knows? Like the game is massive. So I could believe anything. Mm-hmm. But anyway, gone pretty far. They released a patch recently. What's so interesting that we haven't experienced in a while that is kind of fun is we get to watch live as people find not just bugs, but like truly broken builds and
yeah.
things that are just like gross. You know, like there is a meta to invasions now. And right. there always is, right? But at some point, games get patched and they buff things and they nerf things. And eventually you get to a point where there's a sort of a happy medium. And then the people that are the true sort of PvP diehards kind of start mixing things up intentionally, right? Like I remember in Dark Souls 3... there was someone that would invade that was fashion police. So they would invade you, judge how you looked, and then spare you or kill you based upon your attire, you know? Like, that kind of shit I think is hilarious and fun. I have not seen it pop up too much in at least in Elden Ring invasions, but, you know, right now it's like everyone is running katanas with a bleed build, for example. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or someone recently discovered that with a bunch of spells that you could sort of rush, you get this just fuck all laser beam that does insane amounts of damage. And I was actually kind of bummed because I was doing a boss today and, you know, I like to be in other people's worlds and play co-op a lot and then invite them into mine. And I invited someone into mine and then they just fucking annihilated the boss.
Oh, right.
And it was just disgustingly easy for them.
Yeah.
And I was kind of bummed. I wish I could have like, you know, in my mind, the perfect co-op experience in a game like Elden Ring is to bring someone in and we barely scrape by. You know, we juggle aggro. Like he's about to die, and so I charge in and I'm dodging attacks, knowing that if I get hit, I might die, but I gotta buy him some time. Like, that back and forth, super exciting. To have someone in your game and then just, like, one-shot the boss kind of sucks. So be careful out there, folks, in terms of your summons and your invasions and stuff.
Play nice.
Yeah, play nice.
So what do you, are you doing mostly multiplayer now, or are you still exploring?
And Yeah, I'm still very much exploring on my own. It's just for occasional bosses that are especially challenging or, or, you know, for fun ones or ones that I don't care about, I'll bring them in. I did finally change my build. So for the longest time, I was running a pure strength build. And you know, we talked when we were first talking about Elden Ring about just the plethora of stuff in this game, including magic. Like, you get magic very early on and a lot of spells very early on. And pretty much, hands down, spellcasting is far and away the best way to approach this game. I mean, Bleed is strong right now, but holy crap. Like, it is just, it has never been easier to keep your distance and just spam powerful magic.
Yeah, and I mean, that's kind of why I haven't been doing it, because like I was playing you know, the first early boss, Godric. And ironically, one of the times that I summoned someone into my world who was a mage, they got rolled on pretty hard, and so like it actually
the didn't small arenas me. Actually are pretty nice for crushing mages.
Yeah, but I mean, I could see immediately, had they survived, I could see how useful their spells would have been. And so I was like, man, that kind of would have made the boss trivial. Like, do I even want to do that? You know, like, I don't know. I'm having a weird, like, existential moment.
Yeah, it's an interesting place to be, right? Especially for the first playthrough of a game like Elden Ring. Because, you know, I'm the same way. I was using just a big fuckle hammer, pure strength build. I started rocking a shield and got really into guard counters, which is like fun new mechanic, and it really makes you think about, okay, like I'm not going to get the parry timing right all the time. And so if I just chunk it, can I do a strong hit afterwards and punish on that?
Yep.
But what I was finding as I started playing and getting more and more into the late game is that the scaling is just garbage compared to the damage output that other people are doing. Mm. And then poise, I think, is just not working. Like, it's just literally broken. And it happens, right? I think Dark Souls 2, this happened at launch, maybe the first Dark Souls, where poise just isn't working the way that it says that it's supposed to work, right? Mm. So come late game, when I'm fighting some enemies, you know, I'm doing a charged R2 attack, I'm wearing full heavy armor, and I tested this. I have, like, the heaviest armor in the game. I'm fat rolling. I was literally fat rolling for 6 hours of playing this game.
Holy shit.
Yeah, which I would never do.
That's discipline.
Right, and I would never do this in other Souls games, but because of guard counters and great shields, I was like, okay, I'm going to fat roll, because generally speaking, I don't need to dodge. I'm just going to eat the hit and then counterattack, you know? Yep. But what I was finding was it was impossible to get out of the way of large AoE attacks. And then, like, I wasn't actually poising through enemy attacks very much at all.
So they were still interrupting you, basically.
Yes. And I wasn't interrupting them. It's, you know, I have this huge hammer. It's the heaviest hammer in the game. I had 60 strength, and I was getting knocked out of my attacks, like heavy charge attacks.
Strength.
Yeah.
Where are you farming all these echoes, my friend?
I mean, Elden Ring is weird because it's so much longer that and the enemies start dropping more souls. I think on average, right, like, you would beat Dark Souls 3, what, like, level 90? 70 to 90? Maybe slightly higher?
I don't even remember. I feel like I often am lower level than other people I see on the internet.
And oh, same.
YouTube. Like, I wonder, where do all these things come from? Well, how do people make their money?
Where do I invest? So I think in this game, you're probably going to be, like, at least level 150 when you beat the game. I'm right now, I feel underleveled still, dramatically so. I am level, like, 90, but I'm playing with some of my, like, friends and coworkers, and they're, like, 125, 130 at the same level I am. Crap. So I'm definitely behind in levels overall. That being said, though, like, I was focusing on strength and shields, not investing in spellcasting at all, and it just really felt unsatisfying. So I have since switched to it's kind of a trolley build. It is a bleed build, so my apologies, but it's dual wielding the claws, so I look like Wolverine.
And then I found those.
I'm wearing all fur and like a fox head, and I'm just like crouching and running around. It looks very
furry.
I look like a weird, like, half man half beast kind of thing going on, which is very satisfying. I do think it's made the game a little bit more enjoyable, because I do find myself in those bigger fights still getting into the fray. I'm doing more damage, but now, you know, because I'm not focused on spellcasting still, I'm having to learn to dodge and you know, participating in that sort of classic gameplay that I kind of wanted. But yeah, it's interesting. And so the latest patch did nerf some of that spellcasting, but it still seems very, very strong. And, you know, I don't know. It's an interesting place to be, because I think that I'm glad that the game is more accessible, but I'm also constantly fighting this sense of, like, I'm playing wrong. I know that there is no wrong way to play a Dark Souls, right? Ultimately.
Yeah. I mean, it is about the, like, there's a weird kind of keeping up with the Joneses thing, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Adhering to the most recent trend or the meta as it stands now, or, you know, am I doing what I want to do and just being happy with it like that? I mean,
yeah,
it does make for some good memes on the Elden Ring subreddit. You know, where, like, the long-suffering, like, strength endurance players are, like, I saw one where it was just, like, you know, it's just so, like, you know, a fight would be so challenging, and then, like, but what the mage experiences, what a mage player experiences is, like, frolicking through with, like, rainbows and unicorns and stuff that. And, like, it is, I mean, it's funny in a kind of a meta way, but it is kind of a philosophical decision about, like, how do you want to play this game? Does it actually require diligence, and does it require diligence to not ruin it for yourself?
Yeah.
Which is a weird place to be in, you know?
Yeah. Even the summon today, right? Like, I summoned this magic user for a boss fight, and I should have known, because the helmet was like this big orb. They look like a spellcaster, right?
They look like a fucking Mysterio. Yeah,
and I'm like, yeah, they look like fucking Mysterio for sure. And I'm pretty sure that is the sort of meta helmet that, you know, like, it nominally increases your spellcasting or whatever to sort of have the ultimate min-max laser build. Yeah. I should have known, but I don't think I've been in a place before in past games where I really need to think about what the person I'm summoning looks like, you know?
Yeah.
Right. So, like, it's so, and again,
how can I prejudge people? How can I judge people by a book by its cover in order to know who to summon?
So, like, I was asking some friends, oh, what's a fun build? Please don't give me builds that rely on, like, overpowered weapon arts, right? Because there are weapons like this one of the ones that was nerfed was like the Sword of Fire and Shadow or something like that, right? There's weapon arts that are just obscene, and they do crazy amounts of damage, and they have huge range, and they have, like, knockback or whatever. And so it's like
one weapon art that is a bleed one, where it's like a bloody upper swipe or something like that. That one that is now?
I think that's the katana one that is like, crazy powerful.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, I was asking for ones that weren't super strong, and their response was like, oh, we're, like, gatekeeping again. And I want to reiterate, I think that and this is a conversation I hope to have again at some point about Elden Ring and difficulty and, like, whether or not, because I basically got into a small argument the other day about how, like, I think the things that make Elden Ring special are things that are special in Dark Souls and Bloodborne, right? Like, I don't think that it's because it's learning from Breath of the Wild that this game is successful. And I think that's an important conversation to have, because I want people to play those older games, right? At the end of the day, I want people to enjoy the games that I think are beautiful and important. The people that I know that have played are playing Elden Ring and love it, but have never played a Soulsborne game before, I want them to go back and play Dark Souls 3 or Bloodborne or Dark Souls 1 or whatever, right? And part of that conversation is about that difficulty thing, right?
Yeah.
Because I think the difficulty of the Dark Souls games has always been overblown. At the same time, Elden Ring is undeniably the most accessible version of Soulsborne, right?
Yeah.
And I don't want to disparage that accessibility, but at the same time, I want to encourage people to get out of their safe zone and try to experience Dark Souls, not as it was intended, but in a way that gives you the full nuance and experience of what its difficulty and its ability to teach can do, right? And I think if you're just going, like, a pure laser build, you might miss that opportunity, right? Or if you're thinking about, like, how do I maximize my summons, and how do I, like, really own every single boss fight, and how do I, like, farm levels so I can, I feel like you just might miss something out. And I really don't want to come off as a gatekeeper, and I don't know, maybe I am, but like, how do I try to convince people to make the game harder on themselves in a way, you know, in order to find and understand some of the aspects of what I think make these games so elegant.
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, I guess you can probably, I don't know what the right path is, because I completely see what you're saying in terms of part of the beauty of these games is learning those systems. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's no way out but through. You know, you have to learn these systems, and that is the game. I mean, there's always been a little bit of a way to like cheese bosses and stuff like sure, that. So yeah. It's like, you know, there's kind of a way to kind of, there's always a way to, you know, nudge things and like break them a little bit. Like in a weird way, it is kind of like pinball. Like you can kind of tilt, but if you tilt sure. too far, then like the game is over, you know, like, and not that it'll kick you out. It's just that like, okay, this is now trivial. And so why are you even playing? I mean, yeah. like you're probably not playing for the like, cutscenes or whatever, because it's just not that sort of game. So like, why are you even playing, period? Mm-hmm. I feel like the difference for me anyway is the game is just so much more spread out, and not just geographically, although the world is deceptively massive, but the moment to moment dynamics of the game are more spread out, where I definitely have walked into situations where bosses where I've died a dozen times or more, you know, just yeah. messing around and trying to figure out what the pattern is for this boss. But I feel like the time in between those areas is greater, where I could just be exploring, or I could be unlocking other areas or fighting enemies that are difficult but not a like existential threat to me. And so
right, so you're not,
you know,
yeah,
that's where the mm-hmm. that's where the accessibility comes into play, where it's like, whereas Dark Souls or Bloodborne, like it is kind of hard to progress in the game if you don't make your way through those bosses, whereas Elden Ring yeah. Gundyr, more spread out timeline,
you know? Gundyr is the best example, right? Like in Dark yeah. Souls 3 there's a boss within the first 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And if you don't beat him, you are not playing Dark Souls. Like, yeah. It's just the way it is.
Yeah. And so I think like that sort of accessibility I'm totally on board with, because you could easily do a huge multi hour playthrough and get so much satisfaction from the game and exploration and, you know, learning what you want to learn from the game, but not be locked out if you truly don't want to go after the, you know, the five main bosses or however many there are or whatever.
Yeah.
Or like that fucking dragon soldier underneath in the lake, you know?
Yeah.
Like that thing is still one-shotting me. Like I can't get hit by that thing one time without dying. And so it's like, okay, I'll come back to this later on, you know, when I have just some different items, Scott. And stuff. I mean, like it was kind of like, maybe I should just get good. And then I realized I will never finish this game if I play it like this.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, like yeah. I'm in a position where like this thing is, even his basic stomp is one-shotting me. I'm severely underleveled or under-equipped, probably both. And so it's like, okay, I'm just going to put him,
yeah,
stick a pin on the map and come back to this guy later on.
I mean, you mentioned it the week when we first talked about Elden Ring, about how quickly you learn you don't have to fight this guy. Like, you can go explore, yeah. right?
Yeah.
And maybe they've just done a better job of explaining it than they ever have before.
Yeah.
You know, because I do think it's true that you can do that in some games, right? Like, I remember I fought Father Gascoigne before I ever fought the other boss in that yeah. area, right?
Yeah.
And I backtracked. I explored. Like, it's a surprisingly big area. I shoved my hand up a huge pig's butt in a hallway, you know? Like, you do have options, but certainly this game has far more options, and they're bigger,
yeah.
and it teaches you that. I guess I just, you know, I think so many hours in, and watching more people play, and watching people get accustomed to it, and seeing the sort of meta evolve, and the skills mm-hmm. involved, I just feel like I'm in this constant state of trying to convince people that I don't think Elden Ring is a special snowflake, you know? Like, the things that make it great can be found in these other games, you know? But
are you not moved by the exploration, though? Like, it feels like the exploration is just, like, far and away, like, so much more in-depth than it has been in the other games.
Yeah, no, I mean, I am, but, like, you know, when I'm thinking about where I'm going between explorations, right, like, I'll go to another dungeon or I'll go to another keep, and then I find mm-hmm. myself really enjoying, like, me running around on a horse outside isn't my most enjoyable experience in Dark Souls. It's mm-hmm. taking that horse and finding a castle I didn't encounter before.
Yeah.
You know, it's platforming to get to a hidden swamp where there's a yeah. entrance to a cavern that I can explore, right? Like, to me, it's those sort of hand-built locations that are more interesting. Yeah. And so, and you know, I think this is true for a lot of people also, even if this is their first Souls game, right? Like, so yeah, I mean, I am finding that exploration important and unique and interesting, but I think, you know, when we're talking about the world building or the tone or the characters or the boss fights, you know, a lot of that can be found in those other games. And even the idea of you're facing a boss and it's so hard, maybe you need to just go and explore and level up some, has always been true. And it's not been true at the scale that it is, right?
Yeah.
But I think it has pretty much always been true in any Souls game, you know? And again, maybe I'm forcing it too much, because of course, like, the scale is drastically different in Elden Ring versus like Dark Souls 1. And I have an example of Gundyr in Dark Souls 3, right? That was not, you know, you had no option. Like, where could you go explore? Yeah. You could go and explore the two crystal enemies that are there that will just fuck your day up, you know? Like, there's nowhere to explore there, and you cannot level up, right? So it's a perfect example of where, like, that doesn't actually apply, but at a smaller scale, some of that is there, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think FromSoft goes back and forth with the structure of these games, because not all of them, they go back and forth. So, but I think even the pre-Elden Ring games, many of them anyway, were...
Sekiro not counted.
Sekiro, well, I guess you're right. Maybe even Sekiro to a certain extent, where like they... While they may have had like more expansive areas, there was still a feeling that they were segmented, where it's like, oh, like I can load into this level, or like I'm going to load into the, you know, I'm going to load into this environment. And even if it does connect somewhere, you know, you could, like, I think Dark Souls 1 was this way, where like you could theoretically, the whole thing is contiguous, right? Like, I don't know if there's any like non-contiguous sections of that game, but it still doesn't, it doesn't necessarily feel as expansive, because it is mainly it's tighter quarters, it's more crafted areas, you know, whereas, you know, Elden Ring, and I think that's what invites the comparisons to Breath of the Wild, because both of those games are just so upfront with go in any direction, we don't care, do anything. And we're not going to gate you off from anything. Mm-hmm. Like, the world is here for you, versus this is a whole world, but there is still a certain order that you have to go through it in. And both of those games kind of throw out that idea. And so I think that's something that like is meaningfully different, because it's a structural difference, where like there are times in other FromSoft games where like the, you know, the Fire Link Shrine or whatever is essentially a very fancy menu. And this game doesn't have that, which I think is attractive to a certain swath of players, where it, like, it does feel like a world versus a segmented level, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I guess, you know, and again, this is like a totally moot argument, or there's no reason to have this per se, but like, what percentage of the joy comes from that, you know? Like,
right.
I don't know, because I do think that so many of the memorable moments are those experiences that I'm hearing people describe. Like, you know, my hope is that people play Elden Ring, or rather people play who are playing Elden Ring, go back and play Dark Souls, right? Or when they inevitably, I hope, God willing, do a like a Bloodborne remake for PC,
right?
People check it out, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think it could be the optimistic read on it is, and we talked about this a few weeks ago with open world games, where I think open world games, I think they entice people in for whatever reason. I don't know. I don't exactly know the psychology behind it or whatever, but like for something about open world games entices people in, and for those folks that have never played another FromSoft game, if you go to those castles in Elden Ring, you're essentially playing a Dark Souls level.
100%.
You've just been kind of like enticed into it. And then so like, got it's like, oh, wow. Like, whoops. Like, you got Dark Souls in my Elden Ring. And like those of us who know understand it and are like, oh, cool. Like, this could easily be dropped into any of those other games. But for those people that don't, maybe the pitch to them is like, hey, obviously the open world was super fun and it's cool to do the exploration mode. But like the stuff that you do explore, that was also fun, right? Well, check this out. Like, I have a game that's just a castle run, you know? Like, sure, it's castles, yeah. You know? And like, maybe that's a bridge.
Oops,
you know? Like,
all
maybe
castles.
Oops, all castles. You know, it's like, and maybe that's a bridge for them. You know, like, maybe that's a bridge to, like, you know, appreciating those other games in a way that is more, the ramp is more gradual. I mean, this is legitimately one of the most popular games of easily the year and maybe of past multiple years. So it's like all of a sudden, this is no longer a niche thing. Like, this is a mainstream success. And yeah, so, like, yeah. What does that mean? Like, what does that mean for them? What does that mean for the industry? I mean, it's just the explosion of this game has been, like, fully unexpected on my part, but I probably everyone's part, really.
Well, so they said that it's going to be a franchise. And that makes total sense, right? Like, you'd milk this bad boy, but, like, I don't know. I mean, there's a part of me that wonders, like, is this all they're going to do from now on? Like, open world games? Would that be satisfying to you?
I mean, I think that really it probably comes down to that thing that we were just talking about, which is if you are looking for that traditional mechanical Souls experience, and it 100% exists in Elden Ring, it's just the palette, the canvas is so much bigger.
Yeah.
And it's full of other things. It's full of crafting and traversal and open world secrets and all of that stuff. And if they can keep that balance, then great, more power to them. Keep making these games, have each one be different, but, like, you'll still get your castles, you know?
As long as I get my castles.
I mean, the problem is, like, what, and I'm sure they're getting a massive amount of data from everyone, but it's, what are they learning? Like, what lessons are they learning? And, like, are we on a trajectory where that stuff gets downplayed? Like, who knows? Like, that's, I suppose that is your worry. You know?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to name this podcast Oops, All Castles. And, you know, we'll deal with the SEO problem afterwards.
Yeah. I need to sit down and, like, pick your brain about more other things for Elden Ring. Cause I feel like I'm definitely, like, blunt forcing my way through it, which is kind of fun. I generally don't do that, but maybe by the time I, like, progress further in the game, the meta will have looped back around to, like, anchor builds.
Have you explored the south much at all?
I did a castle down there, and one of the enemies was kind of a human-sized lion beast.
Yeah.
I fucking kick. I'm actually building my way towards that sword because I really want to use it. But, like,
that's cool.
I'm not even at 40 strength yet. And so I was like, oh, dude, I want to use that sword. But, like, I'm only on like 20 something strength or whatever. You know, like, I just don't have it yet. So that was fun. Like, that was cool.
I will say, I think the game opens up significantly because then you find yourself backtracking and, you know, you said you went down into the like City of Night or whatever it's called, and
the underground river. I've gone, like, north through the storm hill and, like, all those places.
I mean, the game is so big, it is crazy. So
I think the, you know, what they do with all the different environments and just kind of, like, how all that stuff works, like, I was going through the swamp and also the I forget whatever the, you know, it was kind of, it's kind of like that area in Game of Thrones where the calamity happened or whatever, like the, what is it called? Caelid. The one where, like, just everything is just, you know, plague ridden and messed up. Like, I'm currently in that place right now. Like, it's all that stuff is very cool.
Yeah.
But that's what I like. And like, weirdly looping it all the way back around, like, that's why I'm liking Tunic as well, because there are areas where it's like, holy shit, like, where did this come from? Like, this is a part of this world, you know, like that. Just the exploration is satisfying for me. And then mix in the fact that, you know, you get that kind of mechanical challenge is, you know, it's still definitely attracting me.
It's a good time to be an action adventure player, I guess.
I mean, it really is. Maybe not a good time to be a sword and board type of player. Yeah, but that's, like, true. Spellcasting. You know, we'll figure that out. Yeah.
Summon dead Ash.
What summons are you? I found a bunch of summons. Like, there's so many summons. I also I got one. It was it's just like a gang of demi-humans. It's like straight up, like, you know, half a dozen or more. Like, they just are, like, chittering around like a bunch of rabid monkeys. Like, I like that one quite a bit.
I think most of the ones that have multiple spirits are pretty good. So
yeah. Well, I mean, they do really distract enemies. So, like, if you're in trouble, you're like, oh, God, guys.
Yeah. And there's one that's like a phalanx of five dudes wearing using shields. Like, if you just want to pull aggro, those ones are pretty good. I don't know what the current meta is. For a while, it was the mimic. Like, you eventually get the ability to summon a spirit version of yourself.
Oh, my God.
But they nerfed it because it was too strong.
Too much.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, all that stuff is very, and I think that's one of the accessibility things too. Like those, you find those spirits and like, it does give you an opportunity to like really study the boss because it will distract, you know,
but that's what sunbrowing is for. Like just go and get someone into other people's world, practice the boss, help out, earn souls, you know?
Oh man, I did that for a while. I think I was underneath, it was in the underground river or whatever too. Like I did that for someone. It was that big, antelope boss that was down there.
I love that fight. What a beautiful fight, huh?
It was very Shadow of the Colossus-esque.
Yes.
You know, there's something about that, like
ancestor spirits, I think it's called.
Yes. Yeah. And it was funny too because it was such a dichotomy between the dragon soldier and the ancestor spirit, because the ancestor spirit I beat in one go. Like it was not
no
a
way
problem, like,
oh,
whatsoever.
Man. That took me a long time.
I don't know what it was. I was like, oh, I understand the pattern. Boop, boop, boop. You know, like he's going to do three jumps here and there. And then I'm still just getting just rocked by that, you know, zombie dragon soldier guy or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it's just,
yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah. Wild.
All right. Well, that's Tunic and part two of Elden Ring. Tune in 2025 when I finally beat Elden Ring.
Yeah.
experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address,
and experiencepoints.net is our site of lost grace. Come on down, bring a friend, rest a while at our bonfire, play Dark Souls 3 and Bloodborne while you're at it.
It's for your own good.
It's for your own good. Listen.
All right, everyone, as always, thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Ciao.